52. On the Surface. The bell broke the surface with such speed that it flipped over and Modo and Kalant were tossed into the air. Modo briefly saw the moon, then fell back into the water, fighting to breathe and stay afloat. It was several moments before, blinking hard, he was able to kick his way over to the upside-down bell. When he grabbed its side, he was relieved to find Kalant already hanging on its edge. They helped each other into the bell, then leaned back, breathing heavily. The moon looked down at them. They shivered and were silent for a time. Modo was just happy to let the air restore his body, happy to be on the surface. He had more aches than he could count. He was cramping, especially his stomach muscles. Was this what they called diver's sickness? He pulled the sopping neckerchief over his lips, but left his nose uncovered. He could only see Colette's eyes and the slight outline of her nose and cheeks.
"Is Griff dead?" Colette said finally.
"He was caught up in the tethers and drowned."
"Bonne nouvelle," she said,
though she didn't sound smug. Modo felt something like sorrow. Griff had been driven mad by being invisible. What might he have become if he'd been allowed to have a normal life? Time passed. Modo slept, despite the cold. The sun was beginning to rise. Colette stirred, opened her eyes.
"Any news from the crow's nest?" she asked.
He lifted himself high enough to look over the edge of the bell.
"No rescue ships. Captain Monturiel's penchant for ramming ships has chased all the sea traffic away."
Thinking of Monturiel and Serdar made Modo's heart ache.
"At least the Clockwork Guild are gone."
"Yes, they won't pick us up again," Colette said.
"That woman, what was her name?"
"Hakandottir.
I won't soon forget her. She would have torn our hearts out with that metal hand."
"Yes, she would have." Modo couldn't help hoping she had gone down with the wyvern.
"You look hunched. Are you in pain? And your rash is getting worse," Colette said.
"Yes, maybe." Modo felt his face shifting, his body elongating as he got warmer. He'd thought the burning sensation in his body was just exhaustion. He poked two holes in his neckerchief and pulled it up over his face.
"This rash, this sickness, what is it?"
Colette asked.
"I've always had it." "And yet you could manipulate your face so you looked like that soldier?"
"Yes."
"So the face you've been showing me is not your real face? The one that lies behind the neckerchief is the face you were born with?"
"Yes." She sat back and closed her eyes. He was happy for that. Maybe she wouldn't see that he was growing more hunched, stretching his India rubber suit. It was constricting, but didn't seem to be cutting off his blood flow. If only there was something around large enough to cover his whole body. An hour passed, or more. Modo had difficulty measuring time. The winter sun warmed them only slightly. Colette still lay with her eyes closed, though he couldn't tell if she was asleep. Without opening her eyes, she spoke.
"They used to tease me at the academy. The other agents hated me. I am an Enoko, half Japanese and half French, accepted by neither. I felt like a monster at times."
"You have no idea what it's like to be a monster," Modo wanted to say. But instead he said,
"That must have been terrible."
"It was.
But it made me stronger. I believe that I understand some of what you feel. We have lived and nearly died together, Modo. I consider you to be my friend. I don't know why you would be frightened to show me your face."
"I'm not frightened. It's a choice I've made."
"I kissed you, Modo. Now, reveal your true face. I dare you."
"It's not a game. I never play games." Only a few short months ago he had refused Octavia this same request, and his heart still ached when he remembered her reaction. Colette had saved him, had fought side by side with him. What would it hurt? She wanted to see him, to know him. He hadn't the strength to create another face.
I am disfigured, horribly, I warn you. Modo, I'm not a child.
He breathed in, the air whistling through his flattened nostrils. Slowly, he pulled the neckerchief away. Colette stared directly into Modo's eyes. Then her eyes wandered over his face. He could see that she was fighting to keep her expression impassive. She was forged in fire, made of steel. Yet he saw revulsion rising inside her. She grimaced and looked away, then squeezed her eyes shut.
Please cover your face, she whispered. Please.
He did.
I am sorry,
she said after several minutes.
I thought I was stronger than that. I have let you down. It's the way I am, that's all.
They floated along, and Modo slept on and off. The sun was too far away to warm them. Colette shivered, but he knew she would not want him to hold her. Despite being cold, he wanted to drink from the ocean, but he knew that would only quicken his death.
Water, water, everywhere,
he whispered hoarsely.
Nor any drop to drink.
I suppose that's one of your British poets, Colette said.
They were the first words she had spoken since he'd revealed his face.
Poetry cannot be written in English.
Modo did not have the strength to defend Britain or its poetry. He looked to the horizon. The world became four things: the sky, the water, the sun, and the cold. Where would the currents take them? As he watched Colette close her eyes and drift off, he wondered how long they could last without water. His throat was a parched tunnel. He slept, awoke, slept. He dreamed about sweet biscuits. In the distance, someone called his name, Mrs. Finchley calling him to dinner. There was always a pitcher of lemonade. But it wasn't her voice. Still, it was familiar. A shadow fell across the diving bell.
Ho there! Ho there!
A woman shouted. Modo blinked. A fisherman's boat, sails flapping, sat a distance away. But right next to them was a rowboat with two bearded men at the oars. Standing at the stern, like a figurehead, was a young woman.
Is that you behind that neckerchief, Modo?
Octavia said.
I've come to take you home.